Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. The Republican primary for mayor of the city of Syracuse is June 22nd, and early voting has just started. My guests today are the two candidates running in that primary, Janet Berman and Thomas Babylon. Ms. Berman, an economist and an active community member, has run for public office previously and was endorsed by the city's Republican Party Committee and the city's Conservative Party. Mr. Babylon is an attorney with the Hiscock Legal Aid Society and an active community member, and has past experience as an attorney in the city's Corporation Council office. He's also run for public office previously and has been endorsed by the city's Libertarian Party. Note that a debate between the two candidates running for the Democratic Party nomination aired previously on this program, and listeners can find that show on the Campbell Conversations webpage under the local programming tab on WRVO's main page. But today, it's the Republicans' turn. This is a debate of sorts, perhaps more of a shared conversation emphasizing contrasts. I'll ask the questions and make sure each candidate gets a fair chance to make their points. I've stressed the importance of brevity to the two candidates and warned them that I will intervene if responses go on too long or stray off topic. And as always, I wish we had more time for this important conversation. Tom, welcome to the program. And Janet, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Grant.
Tom, we'll start with you. What's your most central argument for not reelecting the incumbent mayor, Ben Walsh?
Well, I think Ben has done a lot of not so great things. One of the things Ben's done is he's significantly increased the city budget. I think the budget this year is $21 million more than it was 2 years ago. It's about an 8.5% increase from when he took office. And it's really something we need to be cutting costs and not increasing costs. The other thing that Ben's really done is he's really dropped the ball on crime. You look at the James Street apartments, and I used to do these nuisance abatement prosecutions, and this is something that should have been taken care of years ago, not after the news and everyone got on a case about the horrible conditions and after a murder that took place there. He's really dropped the ball on public safety. He's also really dropped the ball with regards to economic development with, small business. I mean, you look downtown and every single shop that was open and thriving when he took office is now closed. Now, a lot of that can be blamed on the pandemic, but he didn't really do anything to ease the concerns and the problems that these small business owners were experiencing. The city has been a hindrance to a lot of the small businesses in the way that they handle the operations and the requirements the small businesses have to go through with licensing and professional licensing and permits and special licenses for special businesses. It's really more difficult to open and operate a business in the city than it is even in the close suburbs like Liverpool or DeWitt or places like that. So he really needs to address that. We need to get those small businesses back up and going, and that's not something that Ben's done either.
I want to get into some of those issues in greater depth as we move along, but let me turn to Janet here, though. The same question. Do you have different central arguments for not reelecting the incumbent mayor than what Tom has just laid out?
I do, and it all falls into the context of what I would refer to as failed leadership. And effective leadership involves first setting the right priorities. Secondly, it's understanding how to manage in a crisis situation. And thirdly, how to manage through major transitions, all of which I have had experience doing in my work in the private sector, in government, and in working with charitable organizations. The failed leadership of Walsh is first demonstrated in his having set the wrong priorities. The first priority of city government should always be public safety. And his actions have shown a tendency to accept the defund police philosophy. He has not adequately funded the police budget. Even when he had the opportunity to restore funding immediately, he did not do so. We had to do cuts during COVID, but cuts could have been deeper in other areas. We should not have sacrificed public safety at the expense of continuing programs that are not as high priority. So he's failed in his priorities. He's failed in that he doesn't know how to manage during a crisis. And thirdly, we're facing major transitions going forward. I'm not aware that he's had much experience in management at all. And whereas I have experience managing a large government organization when I was head of workers' comp, managing through a crisis like the World Trade Center disaster, which was the largest workers' comp incident in history, and then also managing through major transitions in the private sector, government, and charities. In the private sector, managing through the shift from mainframe computer time sharing to personal computers. In the public sector, managing paper-based processing of workers' comp claims to digital processing. So, you know, I have the kind of experience in leadership and have been successful as an effective leader, and I plan to do that for the city.
Okay. Let me stick with you, Janet, and ask you to delineate the most important policy differences between you and your opponent, Tom Babylon. What are the most significant differences between the two of you in terms of the policies that you want to adopt for the city?
Well, I would like to increase funding for the police. My opponent is on record as saying he'd like to restore some of the funding that had been taken away. However, I do not present the option that he has been banking on throughout his campaign, which is auxiliary police force. I've seen him present it as a panacea, and it's not going to solve our problems. You know, we have to take the necessary funds to bolster the staffing in police to address the crime and to allow the opportunity to bring more police in for training where it's appropriate, in their attitudes and how they handle violent situations, volatile situations. But we also need more police on the streets in dedicated patrol areas so that they can cultivate the necessary positive relations with residents and business owners.
All right, I'm gonna interject here because I really wanna focus it on the differences between you. But Tom, that same question to you is, has Janet identified the most important difference between the two of you? It's how you approach policing, or is there another one that's more important, you think?
Well, I think there's several differences. I could probably address them a lot quicker. With regards to policing, Janet thinks that just throwing money at the police department is going to solve our crime issue, which is not the case. It hasn't happened in the past. It can't happen now. You have to recognize that just throwing more police on the street is not going to improve the community relations with the police department. So yes, I have endorsed an auxiliary police force, which has been used very, very, very successful in New York City for over 50 years. They love their auxiliary police. It's worked great. But additionally, Janet, and this came out in the debate yesterday, she's really come out against the city doing anything to help economic development. I believe she said it was not the city's place to assist in economic development, that the county should be doing that. And it's something that I really feel strongly about. The city has a strong role in facilitating economic development in the city with regard to small business and large business. We've got to coax and sell the city as a great resource for large corporations to move here. Large corporations are looking to expand or relocate. We've got a lot of assets and we're a very favorable location. In addition, we need to do things to help small businesses get back on their feet. And I think Janet and I are opposite on that.
Janet, let me just—
May I respond to that, please?
Yes, but I want you to respond just to the question of how you see the economic development responsibilities. Is it something that should be done at the county, or is there a role for the city?
No, there's absolutely a role for the city. What I have said is I would take city government resources that are currently focused on business development and divert them entirely to support of existing businesses. We have to take care of the businesses that are here right now. They are the ones in the best position to ramp up and hire more employees. They are operating right now and they're in a fragile condition, and we need to do what we can to help them stabilize their markets and hire more people. So, that was a gross misstatement of my view on economic policy. Understand, Mr. Babylon, I am an economist and I have worked in industry for decades looking at how tax policy and regulatory policy influences the economy. I understand economic development. My notion of turning over functions to the county was only within the area of recruiting new large businesses to the area. Let's focus in the city on who's here now. Let's rely on the county to do the large scale recruitment to our region.
And Janet, very brief response. Janet, with all due respect, last night at the debate, you were not even aware that the city had an economic development department. So I understand
your
background,
that is
but
not
anyone
true.
Anyone
that's
that watched the debate
worked.
Would understand
that's
that you had no idea that they had an economic development department, Janet.
And
Janet,
and
I would appreciate it if you allowed me to speak
the
and not speak over me.
All right.
I allowed you to speak, Janet.
All that vending machines for tax breaks.
Yeah.
Okay, we want to keep this so that our listeners can understand both of you. So please don't talk over each other. Tom, let me come back to you now because you mentioned the Skyline Apartments at the outset, I believe. Your opinion was that this was something that could have and should have been dealt with a lot earlier in a lot different way. So we have this situation now, and it's the stories that we have heard have really been harrowing. The city has ratcheted up its efforts to get the company to better manage the property. Specifically, tell me, as mayor, how you would have handled this differently. You mentioned the nuisance abatement. Explain to us briefly, if you can, but specifically, how you would have done this differently.
Well, when I worked at the city, part of my duties in the beginning were I prosecute these nuisance abatement cases. And how it works is the department notifies the mayor's office that there's a problem with a particular property. There's a certain number of qualifying arrests. And what happened with Mayor Driscoll and what happened with Mayor Minor, these buildings or these, it could be a corner store, it could be an apartment building. They were brought in almost immediately within months of the number of qualifying arrests, reaching the number of qualifying arrests. You know, the Skyline was getting 500 calls in 6 month period, over 500 calls in a 6 month period. I think when they finally did do a nuisance abatement, which was I think about 30 days ago, there was 15 qualifying arrests. There needs to be two. So, you know, it really is, Mayor Walsh dropped the ball on it. Either the police department was not communicating with him what was occurring at the Skyline, or he just didn't care and was not going to have a nuisance abatement hearing. Now, additionally, there's a lot of things that could have been done through the nuisance abatement process that he still has not done. I would have gone even further. I would have assisted the tenants that are currently living there to find other places to live through our housing department. I would have given them resources, and as they moved out, I would have closed every single vacant apartment under the nuisance abatement as part of the nuisance until the issues were corrected. There's so many issues aside from the video cameras that had blind spots, aside from the fact that the doors were unlocked in the stairwell, so you can go in and out on any level of the stairwell, and there was all kinds of terrible activity occurring there. Aside from the fact that they weren't having, they had drug dealers, wandering the halls, and they had no security. I mean, all these things could have been addressed through nuisance abatement. None of them were for the first 3.5 years or 3+ years of Mayor Walsh's administration. And this is something that should have been done the first 6 months of his administration, not 3 years later.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Tom Babylon and Janet Berman. They're running to be the Republican Party's nominee in this November's election for Syracuse mayor. The primary is June 22nd, and early voting has recently started. We were talking about the Skyline Apartments and what the city could and should have done differently. Tom put forward his ideas about that. Janet, do you have anything different to say about how you would approach the Skyline Apartments?
Well, back in 2018, there was an elderly woman raped in Skyline Apartments. At the time, there was a great deal of public outrage, and I commend the media for digging in and investigative reporting on the conditions within Skyline. They had already deteriorated to a point of human feces in the stairways, drug dealing in the stairways, people being admitted without authority, and non-residents coming into that building. When it took as long as it did, almost 3 years, for the mayor to be embarrassed into taking some kind of action, I was outraged. And it should not take this type of occurrence to get the attention of city administration. There should be a constant dialogue and awareness of what's going on in our city. You know, the 500 calls within a few month period, should have been known by the mayor. And so that's unacceptable. In my administration, these circumstances will not be allowed to persist, and we will take the action necessary. And I have been in Skyline Apartments three times now, and visited with residents there. There was some improvement in the situation after security was hired and they did cleanup operations and people had to sign in with photo ID. However, I received a call from a resident this past Sunday morning indicating that there were no security on duty Saturday or Sunday. I went down there myself Sunday afternoon to investigate. In fact, there was no security. I tweeted it out, I Instagrammed it, Facebooked it, contacted a number of reporters. And Monday, I went back to check on the situation. Tuesday of this week, I went back and checked on the situation. And in fact, there was one security guard on duty whom I met and inquired as to what the situation was. And he said, yes, he was there, but there should have been three. And he was the only one.
Okay.
So again, I have made the public aware of that. And I expect to see some action taken on the part of city administration to get this straight.
Okay, let me stick with you because we talked about policing earlier and Tom set forward a vision about what an auxiliary police force would look like and where it has performed well in the past. You have advocated for more funding for the police. What exactly would you do with that money?
Well, my approach is not just throw money at it and hope that it gets better. We need to raise staffing levels of our police force significantly higher than they are so that we have an adequate number of police on the street at any point in time, that we're not having to pay an outrageous amount of overtime to police officers. And in fact, that could affect the cost savings for us, certainly. But more importantly, we need enough police so that we can dedicate them in specific neighborhoods and facilitate the building of relationships between those officers dedicated to specific neighborhoods and the citizens they serve and the business owners in their community. Through that becomes a basis for trust between the police and the community. And that is one thing we are totally lacking in our city, many cities around the country. We have to give the opportunity for the police and citizens to interact in non-violent situations.
Tom, any quick comments on what Janet just said there?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I agree that we do need to increase our police staffing somewhat. I'm not sure exactly what that number is. I think we have 360 police officers on the force right now. Historically, we've had numbers as high as 500. I don't think we need 500. I think Ben Walsh is calling for 430, and I think that might be what we need. Certainly, it's something we need to look at, what other cities do that have populations our size and crime problems like we do. So I do agree that we do need to increase our regular forces a little bit. And like I said, the auxiliary police would be in addition to that. And the auxiliary police are community-based. Hopefully, they are volunteers that live in the community and they can act as a buffer between the police department and citizens and actually make a better relationship between the police department and citizens, because when the police department shows up, a lot of times they don't know the people that are involved in a particular incident, or they don't know what's going on because they're not familiar with the neighborhood or the people, or perhaps they're late to the scene and they may not have seen what has gone on before they arrived. And a lot of times that causes a lot of confusion. If the auxiliary police officers, if they're based in the neighborhood and they're there, they do walk beats in New York City. They do walk public housing routines and they do things like that. So they're usually the first people on the scene and they're usually the people that call the rank and file. When the rank and file show up, they can explain to them, this is what's going on. This is the person who's a problem. This person is fine. So concentrate your efforts on that person. And I think it would work very well in our city. We need more police. We need auxiliary police. There's all kinds of things. We need to increase the ShotSpotter program so that covers the entire city. Currently, it only covers the south side. And that's something that, gives police, whenever the shot's fired, police instantly receive a call on their cell phones. Located where in the city where the shots occurred, and it creates a response that a lot of times does not happen without ShotSpotter, because people don't know if it's fireworks, they don't know if it's a car backfiring, they're reluctant to call the police. And in the ShotSpotter areas, the shots fired calls are actually increased by like 2/3, I believe. So we need to increase that to the entire city. There's other issues, other parts of the city, like the north side that has shooting issues, it's not just the south side. So we need to do that, those things, and I think we'll be in a better place.
Tom, I'm going to stick with you. We talked a little bit at the beginning about business development and economic development in the city. I want to get very specific about that. The tearing down of I-81 and the redevelopment of its on-the-ground footprint are huge issues facing the city and its future. And I want to focus on the redevelopment of the East Adams Street area, including the replacement of the Pioneer Homes public housing units. What are your biggest concerns about the future redevelopment of that area?
I don't have any big concerns about the redevelopment of the area, to be honest with you. I have a feeling I know what's going to go there. You know, if you look at what the market trends are, the market's going to decide what kind of businesses are going there. And you know, it's my belief that if you look at other cities where this kind of thing has happened, you know, you're going to cater to the people that are getting off the highway. You're going to get gas stations, you're going to get restaurants, and you're going to get hotels. And that's not a terrible thing. It will increase our tax base significantly, our property tax, you know, it'll increase our property tax base, it'll also increase our sales tax base. So it's not terrible. It's not going to be a beautiful, you know, Central Park, and it's probably not what it should be. I think we need to put there whatever's going to create the most economic activity for the city, and it's going to be catering to those people that are getting off the highway. My biggest concern with the 81 project is going to be the construction phase, because we're going to have a long period of time where it's going to be very difficult to get from one side of the city to the other because of the construction that's going on. And I think what we need to do there is we need to make sure that we have good people in DPW that are going to be able to coordinate routes around the construction, and just make sure that people are able to get from one side of the city to the other.
Yeah, the construction is an issue that hasn't received a whole lot of attention so far. But let me follow up with you before we turn to Janet on your idea of what is likely to be in that redevelopment, because you do have this organization, Blueprint 15, which is leading the conversation about this. And so far, if you listen to what they are saying and you listen to what, for example, the mayor is saying about this, there is a stated intention and almost a promise to make sure that this stays substantially a residential area, that there's talk about mixed use, but nonetheless, there's talk about a right to return. And it doesn't sound like the vision that you see as a lot of housing in it.
Yeah, that would be an absolutely wrong approach to put residential. Can you imagine? This is going to be one of the most congested areas in the city. The last thing you want to do is put high capacity housing in an area that's already going to be incredibly congested because you have people coming off the highway. Now, you know, in other, maybe not off the, you know, maybe off the side streets, that would be appropriate. But if we're talking about the main off from the highway that we're talking about now, which is the community grid, if we're talking about the main thoroughfare, to put housing on that main thoroughfare is going to be counterproductive. It's going to make the traffic even worse, and it's not going to bring the tax revenue that the city can get from that high traffic area. So I don't believe, you know, sure, on the side streets it might be appropriate, but I don't think on the main thoroughfare, I don't think residential housing would be an appropriate use of that property.
And Janet, same question to you. What are your concerns about the redevelopment of this East Adams Street area, which is going to happen one way or another? And then some of the things that Tom has said about what kinds of businesses are likely to be there, or the mix between residential and business.
Well, my biggest concern is who's going to financially benefit from that property that's opened up. If we go with history, it's going to be the big development contributors to elected officials' campaigns. All you have to do is look at any development going on within the city of Syracuse and follow the money, and you will find that those developers who've gotten approvals have made major contributions to Ben Walsh's and other key elected officials. If that continues forward, then we have to be concerned whether the interests of the community are really being served. One of the things that I would like to try and do while I'm in office is enact legislation that prohibits any elected official within the city to receive money from someone who is doing business with the city, or someone who is looking for favors, advantages, such as tax advantages to be garnered from the city. So, you know, we have a corruption problem. It's not illegal. It's allowed right now under election law. It should not be. Secondly, I am concerned about the transition, and I've been speaking about this since January. This is the example of a major transition we're going to have to get through. My experience in managing through major transitions is what's needed in this case. The disruption that's going to occur during the construction period is threatens public safety.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I want to interject because there is one political question I want to try to insert, and we really only have about a minute and a half. If you look at the previous mayor's race, 2017, the Republican candidate received 2.6% of the vote behind the Green Party candidate at 4%. That would suggest that any Republican in this race has an extremely steep hill to climb. What's the special sauce that you would bring to a general election to give a chance for a Republican to win in 20 seconds or less?
Okay, well, before I focused on solely Republicans in the run-up to the primary, I met with voters, went door to door, and spoke with voters of all political persuasions. And the heartening fact is that my pledge to make public safety the first priority of my administration is a message that's resonated with voters of all political persuasions.
Okay. And then, Tom, I want to give you a chance. How does a Republican win this race, given what happened in 2017?
Well, I'm going to say I think the Republicans have, I specifically have a great chance of winning if I'm successful in the primary. First, because, in the last election, you had the Republicans largely behind Ben Walsh. I've spoken to every Republican that I've spoken to has said they're not voting for Ben Walsh, except in, the few people that work for him or are related to him. So I think that I can get the Republicans behind me, and that will give us a slight advantage. You know, additionally, and then the Democrat vote.
Briefly, please.
Okay,
really
Democrat
vote
is going to be split between Ben and the Democratic candidate. But additionally, my vision of economic development, specifically focused on small business, resonates very, very largely in the low-income neighborhoods, because everybody has their own dreams. They have their own side hustles. They want to make their dreams come true. They want to have their own small businesses, and they want the city to be able to do that.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. That was Janet Berman and Tom Babylon. The Republican primary is June 22nd. Early voting has already started. And again, a previous program provided a debate between the two candidates for the Democratic Party's nomination. Mr. Babylon, Ms. Berman, thanks for talking with me. And as always, I want to wish good health to you and your family.
Thank you, Grant.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, is hosted and produced by Grant Reher and edited by Mark Lefonier. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program and to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.